listening to Real Talk SLP with your host, Felice Clark, the Doubling Speechy. This is a show to help speech pathologists navigate the SLP world with real-life stories to celebrate therapy successes and how to persevere when failure comes knocking on your door. This is the Real Talk SLP podcast show with your host, Felice Clark, the Dabbling Speechy, and you are listening to episode number 3. Today, I'm excited because I have my East Coast SLP bestie, Hallie Sherman from Speech Time Fun on the show, and it has been such a blast having her as a real-life friend and an online friend for probably about 6 years, I think. It's been about that long, and over the years, we have come to know each other and we reach out to each other and ask each other for help with therapy ideas. And she is the queen of low prep therapy and how to get it done and while keeping your students engaged and having a good time in the speech room. So I wanted to introduce Hallie. Hello. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
I know. East Coast meets West Coast. So before we get started, why don't you share a little bit about your caseload? Or, well, I guess we could just go into the topic of today. We're talking about mixed group therapy and what it's all about and how we can do it better. So if you want to share a little bit about why you have mixed groups in the first place.
Sure. So I am a speech pathologist from New York, and I work primarily with fifth and sixth graders. So by the time they get to me, I don't have as many articulation cases and things like that. However, their availability is difficult, is a challenge. I'm not allowed to take them during content classes because, you know, it's really important that they sit through ELA and math. So I have to take them from specials, but they only have one special a day, but I'm not allowed to take them from gym. I can only have groups of up to 5. My closet of a classroom only fits 5 anyway. So it really is a challenge to, I take them when I can. And a lot of my students come from the same class or block, so I'm squeezing in 10 kids with like 2 available slots. A lot of my students I see once to twice a week, so I'm really trying to squeeze them in whenever I can, and it's not necessarily groupings of like everyone working on vocabulary or everyone working on critical thinking. It's, are you available? Great, I have an open seat, you're coming on in. So I learned early on that if this is the way it's going to be, I have to make it work because I'm their last stop before they go to middle school, and like I try to wean them out, and whether or not they truly need to be there for, you know, continuing the service, and I need to keep their motivation alive as well. So I really need to be able to work on these goals and not be so fluffy about it, but meanwhile I have a group of students that are working on completely different things at the exact same time. So I sometimes feel like I'm, you know, at a 3-ring circus trying to wrangle it all in. I've, you know, had days where I wanted to rip my hair out. And I was like, this can't work. I need to do something better because I don't want to be here till 10 o'clock at night trying to lesson plan for every different goal to make sure that I'm taking data on every single thing. I need to make it work. I now have 2 kids at home. I want to be able to leave when I'm able to leave, and I want to be able to leave my work at work as much as possible. So I learned some tricks over the years that's made it a little bit easier for me, yet still helps me get the job done, and I don't feel like I'm cheapening my students out on any true therapy. So,
yeah, I think the reality is that we're never escaping mixed groups. It's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. As long as we are practicing in the school setting, I think I've always had mixed groups ever. I did a quote one time on Instagram. It was like, I've been rocking mixed groups since 2007, and that was when I started.
It's true. If you have an open seat, someone's going to take it because my district's not going to hire someone else just because, and if I have an open seat, just because I want to have cutesy little groups. So
cutesy little groups. Yeah, in the elementary setting, because I work K-5, and there is a slight a flexibility, because a lot of times if I get first graders, I could have 8 first graders. So if the teachers are all cool with it, I can take some of the Arctic kids in a group and then take the next group of first graders. But a lot of times the teachers, they don't want to have to keep track of Johnny and is going at 9 and then Susie's going at 9:30. Mm-hmm. They'd rather just have Johnny and Susie go at 9. And it usually has to work out that way because we have the same issue. It's like Common Core. They can't miss music. They can't miss PE. Then they can't miss ELD, which is English Language Development. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you call it that?
ELA, we call it.
Yeah. Well, we call it for English language learners.
They have ESL, ENL, L. I don't remember now.
Yeah. So we have the same thing. And you just got to make it work. So.
And those articulation students never seem to be in the same class. Like, it would make it so much easier if they were.
I know. Well, it's the same thing with push-in. They're like, do push-in more. And I have figured out ways to do push-in for my special day classrooms. But I can't push in to a gen ed class for one kid when mm-hmm. I needed to see 4 other kids. So if they could figure that out, and then I'd be golden. I'd push in all the time in gen ed. Mm-hmm. Or if they lower your caseload enough so that you could push in for that one kid, that'd be a dream.
And then you don't have common planning time and all that fun stuff that would make it more efficient. And I prefer pull out for that reason. Especially, you know, even with mixed groups, it's easier for me to do the circus act in my closet of a classroom than me trying to, you know, wrangle the teacher in to help me out, you know, at the same time.
Yes, I agree. So let's talk about our craziest mixed group that you've ever had. What's the craziest mixed group you've ever had?
Last year I had an interesting one. I had like 2 articulation cases. But, you know, one was strictly R, one was like a little lisp, and then I had a fluency case, and then like a girl with like weak vocabulary and language thrown in there. It was like, how do I tackle fluency articulation for 2 different sounds and language all at the same time? Meanwhile, the Artic students were like really bright, so they didn't need to necessarily work on the language goals. They wanted to play games all the time, but that wasn't helping the language student. I was like, oh my goodness. It was like a Friday right before lunch, nonetheless. I was oh my goodness. I was like, can this day end? It'd be happy hour time instead.
yeah, I would say I'm picturing this one student in particular that I had. I want to say there was at least 4 kids in my group, because I had a caseload of 75. So a lot of my day was 8 to 10 groups a day, with 4 to 5 kids. And then, of course, I had probably the same situation as you, only then you throw in a social skill kid mm-hmm. who has issues with transition and when life doesn't go his way. So I just remember days where I'm like, well, that session just ended because he's, you know, throwing himself on the floor. And all of us are like, okay.
And then it's just survival at that point.
Yeah,
right?
Then it's like, you know what? We're going to, yeah, it is. And I had to address when that would happen in that group, I would have to address his behavior and follow through and then somehow, you know, quickly tell the kids, well, can you work on your sounds together? Well, just keep learning. We're all going to ignore it. He'll come back to the table.
Oh, the joys, SLP problems, right?
Right. And I had to keep reminding myself, like, if we keep pushing on teaching the routines and the expectations and getting this behavior under wraps, the mixed group will get better with time. And it did.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely found the more creative in the planning, the easier and the less behaviors, because everyone is mm-hmm. held accountable for something and doing something, and there's not as much wait time. I find is when the students are sitting around waiting for the other students to like take their turn or go, that's when the behaviors come out.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question. Like, what challenges do you face with mixed groups? And I would definitely say engagement and behavior are something that I've definitely put a professional like goal for myself to increase my knowledge about behavior management and how to engage the students that's relevant to their goals.
Definitely. And coming up with ways that every student is doing something at the exact same time, meanwhile they're working on something completely different. Also, taking data to make sure you're actually meeting those goals at the same time. So while you're trying to do this three-ring circus, you also have to, like, take data about it at the same, exact same time. Like, don't you wish you had, like, a personal assistant sitting next to you, like, I got the data thing, you just wrangling, you know, the cattle.
That would be amazing. And then, yeah, and then you're trying to keep track of how many prompts did I give that, how many prompts am I giving that student for each time, and then trying to tally it if correctly. It is a circus act.
And it's like, did I come up for air this day? I need data on myself, like...
Yeah, I was I'm laughing because, yeah, well, and I have because it's so true. And yeah, so I'm trying to get back on track here. Let's see here. We'll just have Avery edit that out. Hopefully he can. Otherwise we'll just keep it in. So let's just share, we can go back and forth and share some ways that we have found some balance with mixed group planning that's, I would say, quick and easy, or, because sometimes it isn't easy to plan for mixed groups, but I have found, like, certain resources, like YouTube videos, I can easily, I know where the resource is, I know it's a video, so I can go and quickly make some cheat sheets and have a lesson planned.
I'm all about the cheat sheet. I'll take a piece of paper, fold it in half, in threes and fours, however many goals I have going on, and I quickly just jot down some prompts and cues and, you know, vocabulary and questions that I might use on using that video or a book, storybook. And this way, it holds me accountable, and I can just take data right on that sheet, too, which helps.
Yeah, and then I...
What videos do you like? What's your favorite wordless video or YouTube video to use?
Since the holidays are coming up, I'm a big Elf fan, and a lot of people use the Elf video clips for social skills, which is really awesome for that. I have a blog post on the Elf video for, I'll have to go back and look because I wrote it a couple of years ago. I share mostly about social skills and how you can use it for that, but you really can use it for describing, summarizing, having the students explain what happened in the video with their speech sound. You know, while the social, so you just have to start, I think, training your brain, like Johnny's gonna, you know, I'm only gonna ask him inference questions. Mm-hmm. And then Susie, at the end of the video, Susie's gonna practice her R sound. I don't know why I keep saying Johnny and Susie. I'm afraid I'm gonna say one of my students' names and then totally violate confidentiality or something.
That was a fun one. I like that.
Yeah. And then, I think you turned me on to holiday commercials.
I love the Super Bowl commercials, like all those ones that are like Doritos and some of the car, Volkswagen has some great YouTube videos. I actually have a blog post that has a whole bunch of the YouTube videos, commercials that I like, linked right in, so you can just watch some more right there. I love using commercials. I love using the Pixar shorts. Like those wordless videos, they're great. They have some great music to go along with it. So you can even use the music as part of the activity. Like what does the music tell us? You can do some predicting and guesstimating, and you can work on social skills because they're not talking. So you can try, you have to infer using their body language and all that fun stuff. So there's so many goals you can work on. And I love it that you can really, it doesn't require any prep other than like finding internet. That's really all it is.
And you
love
can,
it.
Yeah, and you can have students answer WH questions about the video, or
you can give each one of them a graphic organizer that works on each of their individual goals, and they could all fill it out while watching the same video. So there's so many different things you can do this way. Every student is doing something for their own goal, and as long as each student is aware of why they're there and what their own goal is, then they can be held accountable for whatever activity you're doing, especially with the YouTube video.
I agree. And I forgot, we have to do a Simon's Cat shout out, because I
love Simon's Cat. I love that they also have, he has so many seasonal ones. So you can even just Google Simon's Cat, you know, Christmas collection, and you can have a whole bunch of Christmas ones that are, you know, collected together, that are stitched together, pre-done right on YouTube. I love it. The kids love it. I actually started following him on like Facebook and Instagram. This way, like, I'm notified when he has new clips coming out, which is awesome.
Yeah, my kids like it too. And one activity I've done with those videos is I will take a piece of paper, have the kids draw four boxes, and we'll watch about 30 seconds, because they're only like 2 minutes, and we'll watch about 30 seconds, and then I'll have them draw what happened in the 30 seconds. And then it helps me to see, because some of my kids who are struggling with remembering details, they're not visualizing the background, so we can cover the vocabulary while they're drawing it, like, oh, we need to draw that lamp because that's in the living room, blah, blah, blah. And then, so each segment, they draw four pictures. And then we use that for story retell. We use it for creating complex sentences. We use it for, you know, generating sentences with your speech sound. And then
that's a great idea.
Making inferences.
I like it.
Yeah, it's too low prep. And then it keeps everybody busy. So if I did want to have Johnny say a sound 10 times to get some quick data, everyone's drawing, and
give them some crayons, let them do some more with it, you know?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of YouTube because it's no prep, and that's, I mean, holidays are coming, things are stressful. I would say that's your friend right there.
Totally. YouTube is free and your friend.
Free and your friend. And then I know we both like to use those 100 trial race games. Do you want to explain what those are?
Sure. I mean, you have a great blog post, and I have some like freebies also on my page that has, so you can either just draw it out yourself or find some freebies, but that has 100 boxes, and basically you give a student a dice or a spinner or something. Or you don't even have to. You can just have them just keep doing their sound until they get to 100. But I just like having, like, assigning them the amount each time. So you can roll a dice, spin to see how many. And I like to get the multi-sided dice, which has, like, numbers of, like, 15, 18, things like that. So they roll the dice, have to say their sound 18 times, and then they get to color, stamp, you know, put Play-Doh, whatever kind of, you know, task you want them to do until they get to 100. Who can get to 100 first? So that's a great thing to do for your articulation students, but it's such a low prep and fun idea. You can do it with your language students too. So yes, your language students are not going to maybe answer 100 WH questions because we can't think of that many questions off the top of our head. And you know, half the task card things don't come with that many, and who wants to print all that out? But you can give them one WH question and then let them roll the dice to color, stamp, whatever, that same 100 trial page, and see who gets to 100. So you can have your articulation student doing their 100 trials, but the other students in their group can try to get 100 points and be still playing the same game, yet just doing their own different tasks in just a fun way. And they love the competition, so why not? And I love free and easy to prep, so win-win.
Exactly. Yeah, my kids like it. I use it almost as just a generic – I've used it as a generic game, even if I didn't have our tick kids in my group. And it's just, or we'll do it at the end. So I'll say, hey, let's work. Everyone needs to work on their worksheet or whatever the thing is that I'm doing. Or we're going to read this book. And then everyone has to do this many times. And then we'll play this game at the end. And it's just a game for fun. Or I do it the way you're talking about, where my Artic kids, they have to get to 100. And I do the same thing with the 15 dice. I trick them. So
especially if you have the dry erase dice, you can put just high numbers on them and use that. Any way to get, you know, versus just like a six-sided dice, because you're going to be there like really all day, especially if you have a large group. So it just anything that will, and the best part is, well, one student is like all the students are coloring while the other student's getting their turn. So it's automatically built in that the students are doing something while someone else is going. That's the best part.
Yeah. Do you have any tips or suggestions for games that you like to use with mixed groups?
I like games that involve students doing something. So like even games like Apples to Apples, and I like Obstacles and Bubble Talk, where everyone's doing something, yet each student is held accountable towards their goal. So like, you know, I've rigged it, and it's totally fine. I've pulled out, you know, say you're working on Bubble Talk. I will give the captions that have like the R sound in it to Johnny that's working on the R sound. And, you know, I will walk over to Sally, who's working on vocabulary, and make sure she understands all the different vocabulary words in her card. Like, students don't care if you're cheating. It's only, like, I'm not cheating enough that it's, like, going to help one student out or not. So, you know, and even when you show the picture, I'll pull up pictures that have, you know, maybe there's a whole bunch of, like, Christmas ones. You might take out the Christmas scenes one and have them, well, you know, use in this Christmas scene and say what else they think could be in there. And you can do categorization. There's so many different things you can do with those types of games because I wouldn't say it's open-ended, but it elicits so much language and conversation. So you can easily just target what you need to. I also like using a game like Suspend Junior, anything that has like color coding, and I make myself like a little key on an index card or post-it. So like this in Suspend Junior, they spin and whatever color they land on, they have to add it to the metal thing, almost like Topple or Kerplunk, anything that has color coding, you can make yourself a key. So like, you know, in Topple, in order if you're going to put the green on, you have to do this task first. And every student will have something else that they would have to do if they got green based on their goal. So your Johnny, who's working on ours, would have to, if he was using green, he would have to say a sound in a sentence. If he was using yellow, he has to say a rhyming word with his, whatever it may be. But Susie Q is, you know, doing synonyms and antonyms, with the exact same game. Give each of them a visual towards what they're working on, and color code it if the game is color coding. And you can even make a simple game like that using like popsicle sticks, the same concept. You know, like a pick a stick kind of game. You know, you pick a stick, whatever color it is, you have to do it according to your task. So you can take games that are out there or create your own that will make every student held accountable, but they're all doing something at the exact same time is really the goal.
Yeah, and I would recommend looking at the game you want to use and think about how you can use that game to meet goals. And you don't have to play by the rules. Mm-hmm. Or you can do a whole, like sometimes what I've done is I will take the 25-minute session and the first 10, 15 minutes is just teaching the skills that I want to teach. Maybe I'm only going to teach the vocabulary and the WH question students in that teaching time, just because that's, you know, I got to really teach this skill. I wanted to talk with them about some vocabulary. But then when we play the game, my emphasis will really be on the articulation student practicing their sound. And then the other two, I'm going to see how they're generalizing with the game. But, you know, you can break it up too like that. I've done that before where
certain. Definitely.
So, yeah, I like it. So before we sign off here on this episode, I wanted to know if you had any suggestions for how to engage your mixed groups with low stress for the clinician during the holiday season. Because I know that usually around the holidays, it's always that everything's due right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. All the meetings happen. So you're all, you know.
And you don't want to bring it home with you. Like Christmas
break. Yeah. So you got to get that done. So how do you still make mixed groups engaging without being super stressed out?
My number one tip is don't be so hard on yourself. You be flexible. Be okay with that, you know, Johnny and Susie Q are only getting 3 trials that session. It's okay. They still got 3 trials. It's better than 0. You can't get so hung up on, I need 100, you know, trials of every student working on 100 different things, especially when things get a little bit crazy. And the other thing is, like, use what you have. Use your, you know, toy catalogs that you get in the mail. Use your supermarket circulars. Use YouTube. Use some storybooks that are, you know, old lady who swallowed a bell. What is it, bell?
Those Christmas oh, right, stories. Right. Mm-hmm.
Use whatever you have, you know, lying around. Don't have, you don't have to create a million wheels, you know, especially this time of year. Use what you have and try to think of all the different ways that you can target, all the different goals you can target using one activity, one craft, one book, one video. And if you love it and you're excited about it, your students will be excited about it too. Especially they love anything having to do with the holidays. So use the holiday theme and try to target as many things as you can. You know, grab a grab a catalog, you know, categorize, describe, answer WH questions, find gifts with your R sound. They can make little collages, bring, you know, little wish lists for themselves to bring home using, you know, working on their goals. Just don't be so hard on yourself and celebrate your successes. You know, get yourself a gift too for the holidays.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to, like, for the whole month of December, I usually just do Gingerbread Man.
Mm-hmm. And I so read, many things you can do.
I just do the Gingerbread Man, and I just switch out the activities and reread the book, and I do all that stuff. And sometimes I'll do holiday cookie theme, but it all depends. I usually take stock of where I am with my life at a certain period of time, because if a lot of things are going on in your personal life, or you got 7 IEP meetings and you're supposed to be testing all these kids, you really can't be doing high prep activities. But let's say life has been good, you got lots of time, or a little bit more time. I would take that time to really invest in some of your, like, let's say you wanted to really get better at implementing a Gingerbread Man theme. Really take the time to write those cheat sheets out, to find some activities that you like on Pinterest and Teachers Pay Teachers, and get them organized so you can use them next year. So when it is crazy, you still have that engaging lesson that you didn't have to prep this that next year, you know? So
holidays are showing up again next year, and you're going to have the same goals. Different students maybe, but similar goals. I mean, our goals, they might be just different variations of the same thing, typically year after year. So you can almost assume you're going to have an articulation student during a holiday time. You're going to assume you're going to have some WH questions, some sequencing, some describing. We're always working on similar things, especially when you're working with similar ages year after year. So yeah, work on Gingerbread. I like to just do generic, like, gift talking. Like, sometimes I'll, like, let them even, we'll talk about wrapping gifts and the following directions of wrapping gifts, and let them make cards for their families and bring, and just give them construction paper. Let bring in some wrapping paper and some, let them, you know, go crazy and experience all these different things in your speech therapy room. It doesn't, you can just take things that you have at home, or they can get really cheap at, like, dollar stores. And it can go such a long way. And I always get, like, a stash of it, and then I usually have it for 3 years because I don't end up using, you know, the whole thing that 1 year.
Well, yeah. And then the next session, you could actually work on sequencing, or why did we write that card, and talking about what is why. You know, you could
drag it out. Yeah.
Yeah, drag it out. And it's good for kids with language impairments too, because they need to hear the same vocabulary a lot. Mm-hmm. So.
And that last week before break, like, seriously, there's so many holiday parties and they're so usually hyped up on sugar. We play Uno. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. Uno is a lot of fun and can work on so many goals. So.
Yep. I save all the games for the last week.
But you never know who's, like, you know, who's leaving for vacation early. Like, you know, where is Billy? Where is Johnny? Why didn't they show up today? You're like, I had all the, you don't want to go crazy planning and then they don't show up. So
I agree. Well, thanks, Hallie, for coming on and talking about mixed groups. I think it's something that we all struggle with and question our abilities. And I find that when I reach out to other people, I get better at them because I hear what they're doing and then I implement what they're doing.
No, and definitely. I love this. I'm going to use ELF this year and even the four squares of Simon Cat. I'm excited about using that. And mixed groups are such a challenge. Like, that's why I think it's, I'm so glad that we included a segment in our speech retreat conference on mixed groups, because so many people struggle with it, and we're all in this together. We all have the same struggles. I'm not perfect at it. I can easily get better at it. Each and every year, I always try to, and I'm always learning from other SLPs, you know, like you, of, you know, what I can do better next time. So I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check out Suspend Junior. I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's a fun game. It's by Melissa and Doug. It's a fun
game. I'm going to have to tell my husband to put it in my stocking. Or I might just go buy it and then put it in my stocking.
Anyway, treat to yourself, because it'll make lesson planning a lot easier.
Cool. I'm going to have to check it out. Thanks for tuning in to the Real Talk SLP show. And I will see you next week. Take care.
Bye.
Come on.